This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, produced by Pete Zimmerman. I'm John Williams. Tim Crane is our first guest, who we haven't talked to in a while. Hey, Tim, you're on WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm great, John. Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
You are the president of Wintrust. Wintrust.com is the website. So that's a dozen or more branches plus other lines of business, right?
It is, John. Wintrust has actually about 150 locations in the Chicago area and a number more in the southeast Wisconsin area.
I don't think I would sleep at night. I have enough trouble keeping track of my own finances, let alone be in charge of a whole bunch of banks.
Oh, well, you know, it's banks are doing reasonably well, and we're pleased to be greeting our customers face-to-face a little bit more than we have for the past year.
Yeah, we've heard that. Banks are doing pretty well. I mean, it would seem to me like your business would be tied to interest rates, wouldn't it? And rates are low, so how is a bank doing these days?
The bank's doing great. Early in the week announced record earnings, and as you say, the low interest rates are great for customers, too. A lot of mortgage refinance activity, and maybe a little bit tougher for those living on the income from CDs, but low rates may be with us for a while here.
Yeah, and you champion that, I presume?
Well, we operate in both environments and just do our best to take care of clients trying to purchase homes and finance their businesses, and so either way is okay.
What's your outlook for the rest of the year? We hear all sorts of predictions, some of them very rosy. Are you optimistic about the economy, and what do you think about stocks?
Well, we are optimistic. I think, more and more people have access to vaccines. There's been quite a bit of stimulus. Mortgage refinance is helping some people keep a little bit more money in their pockets, and so certainly that's been good for stocks so far. We'll see if that's still the case. There's some proposals around taxing capital gains, which may slow things down a little bit.
Yeah, taxing, you're talking about 28%, right?
Well, I think there's proposals even to tax them at a rate higher than that. And so we'll kind of see how that plays through with the current administration.
And maybe I'm thinking of the corporate tax rate was something they
correct.
Were talking about, 28%. And that, I think, strikes some people as high. Do you think that would have a chilling effect maybe on hiring, if nothing else? What's your read on that?
Well, not so sure on the tax rate. I mean, obviously, it could slow some investment. I think we're seeing the labor market, though, to be pretty strong. If you drive through sort of the unscientific view, if you drive through an industrial park today, two or three out of four businesses are certainly looking to hire. And as we come back from the pandemic and a lot of people being at home, we think there'll be lots of opportunity for folks looking for jobs.
A lot of money does seem to be finding its way into the economy, and a lot of it is still on the sidelines. Do you have a sense of what people have been doing with their stimulus checks? Where's all that money been going?
I think the savings rate is up quite a bit. There's certainly statistics that support that. We're hopeful that folks will spend some of that money as the economy opens up here. But we're seeing savings up certainly across the board.
So what's the status of PPP right now relative to your bank and in general?
You bet. PPP, or the Paycheck Protection Program, has been in place now for almost a year. We've done about 20,000 loans, most for Chicago area businesses. The program runs, really another month or so here, but the money is sort of running out, and businesses that have not applied yet should be paying attention to when their financial institution is going to stop taking applications.
How does that work, Tim? Did an individual bank or a branch, say, get allotted a certain amount of funds that you can lend out? Is that the idea?
No, John. It's sort of the government program, and the banks and certain other non-banks have facilitated applications to the SBA, and they process them. It's sort of first come, first serve. One of the things that we've done for businesses that have had either a tougher time understanding the regulations or don't have access to technology is opening a number of resource centers where they can come into one of eight Wintrust locations and get help and access to computers if needed.
I understood those were federal dollars, but it's a federal pool. It's not your pool that they're drawing from. You're just the facilitator in that case, huh?
That's correct, John. And these loans, in many cases, are forgivable. So for clients that meet certain conditions after receiving a loan and a period of time passing, can apply for forgiveness of these loans.
I thought there was another, though, amount of those PPP dollars that were accessible. You do make it sound as though there are still some dollars to be had. The president at Wintrust is Tim Crane. We're talking a little bit about the banking business. Tim, just before we pause there, you were talking a little bit about the PPP, the Payroll Protection Plan. So there are still some dollars there for businesses to access, right?
There are, John, but again, the program runs out here in the next several weeks, and so businesses that have not applied yet should talk to their financial institution sooner rather than later.
Is there a limit on the size of the business or the amount somebody can borrow? Have the rules changed on that at all?
They have, John. There's been several waves of PPP funds available, and the rules have changed as the program has progressed. So our website and certainly the websites of others would provide some of that information, but there are maximum limits, for example, in terms of the number of employees a business can have and the amount of money that's available to borrow.
Talk to me a little bit about refinancing or home buying. What's going on at Wintrust with all of that these days?
Well, it's been gangbusters. You mentioned earlier the low rates, and certainly the mortgage business has been terrific for banks and a boon for many customers that have been able to reduce their payments by refinancing. Anybody who's got a mortgage now that's 4% or higher and continues to have good credit and value in their home certainly should look into whether it makes sense to refinance.
So what are people doing? Are they doing 30-year fixed, or are they really crushing it and doing 15 or 20 and trying to get the rate even lower?
Yeah, a little of both. If folks are making additional payments on their mortgages now, sometimes switching the 15-year loans to get the better rates. And certainly the 30-year rates are at a point where a lot of people are buying either their first home or can afford more home than they've had in the past. In fact, we're sort of hearing in some areas that there's a shortage of homes to buy.
Huh. Yeah, we've heard that too. Well, so how much are people putting down on these houses?
Typically it's 20%, but there's programs that allow people to put down less, and some people feel comfortable with lower mortgage rates and just leave the equity in their home as they continue to build up that value.
Once upon a time, you'd buy down the rate. You'd come in with more cash to maybe get yourself a better deal. But I don't know that that's necessary these days. The 30-year fixed, if you can get it at 3-something, that's the kind of deal you used to dream about.
Absolutely. And it's made home ownership affordable for a lot of people. And there's, again, certainly opportunities for folks that already own homes to save money as well.
Are people coming into the branches these days? And I wonder if they're going to come back in the numbers they used to, either because mobility has changed, that is, we don't have to do face-to-face banking anymore, or because they're nervous about going inside buildings. What's it like in the stores?
Well, all of our branches are open, and we're obviously, again, excited to see folks that choose to come into our lobbies to do that. But you're right, there's a full suite of services at Wintrust that allow our customers to do most of their normal banking activity online. And whether that's remote deposits or it's online bill payment or mobile banking, there's certainly lots of options for people to do that.
I guess I shouldn't be nostalgic about it. I still walk into the branch. I still like to say hello to the person that says hello to me and then do my banking. Sometimes just to cash a check, or maybe it's something more complicated, but I like the human touch.
Well, we like it too, and we find that clients having conversations with us often uncover opportunities for us to help them or let us help them kind of satisfy some needs that they have. We have, like many banks, have seen electronic usage, again, whether it's mobile banking or bill payment, go up as, branch lobbies have been limited in some cases. Mm-hmm. But we're finding people use all the tools, and when they have something that's more complicated or, to your point, they just want a little reassurance, we're happy to see them in our lobbies.
Terry Savage was talking this last couple of weeks. Her latest harangue, don't tell her I said that, was she said, look, if you don't have a bank and you get a stimulus check, if you find yourself in some money, don't go to one of these currency exchanges or these places that charge a high percentage of what you're about to cash. She said, go to a Wintrust and you can open up an account for a nominal amount of money and a nominal fee, even if you have low deposit levels. And now you are banking, quote unquote. And she said, you never have to go in the premises again, but you use a bank rather than those places. Are you finding people are doing that, and what do you make of her observation?
Well, we are, and certainly we think that folks that don't have bank accounts today should at least have the opportunity to. And we offer a couple of accounts that clients can come in with little or no opening balance, and few, if any, fees can use our accounts. And we find that some people just need a little bit of education and need to understand how these accounts operate, and we're happy to help them through that.
How do you all handle out-of-network ATM fees? How does that work?
Well, it's different by product, but for example, on our total access checking account, which we advertise on WGN, very little money to open the account, and the ATM fees, whether they're at a Wintrust ATM or a foreign ATM, are either free or refunded to them. So it's a way for people to use, from a convenience standpoint, ATMs anywhere they would like without worrying about those charges.
That's another thing that Terry was talking about. And I got to tell you, one of the most discouraging windows to see is when you're at an ATM, you're out of network, your bank doesn't do what, say, Wintrust does, and now it's like, will you agree to the $3 charge? And you think, this is so painful. And a lot of times you say, yeah, I got to give you $3 to push this button. I guess that's a long way of saying I'm glad that that exists. I honestly don't know how ubiquitous that is. Maybe that's the way the industry is going, but not everybody is like that.
No, not everybody is. And it's one of the great secrets at Wintrust is that we try to make these services as accessible as possible and as easy to use as possible. From a convenience standpoint, I don't think there are many better in Chicago than Wintrust is.
Are people using the cash stations to make deposits? I know that a lot of us do the withdrawals, but are people like feeding checks into the machines and making those deposits without having to, talk to anybody, just using the kiosks?
Yeah, it's less common, John, and often limited to your own financial institution's ATM machines. A lot of people are now using the remote deposit capture, where you can actually just take a picture of a check or an instrument with your phone, and your bank will automatically process it as if you'd had been there.
The technology is pretty amazing, isn't it? Think about how your industry has changed in the last 10 years, 5 years, 20 years. It's amazing, isn't it?
Well, it has, and it will continue to change, but we believe that community banking is still about having somebody you can talk to when you need it, and the PPP loans and the stimulus checks have been great examples of that, where there have been opportunities for us to talk to folks about how they should be looking at some of these things and how they should manage their money.
Any last observations from you, Tim, about 2021 going forward in the banking business?
We're pretty optimistic. We're seeing the economy open up a little bit in Chicago and the Midwest. We're on the commercial front seeing more clients willing to meet with us face to face and frankly exploring whether their current bank relationship makes sense, and we're excited about that. We like to talk about Wintrust and like to talk about things that might be good for our clients.
Now, it's funny because you and I have been talking more about retail, about individuals, but maybe we should have spent more time and will another day about how the business community is banking these days. You sound optimistic there. You see more of that business picking up?
Well, we are, John, especially as travel opens up and restaurants open up and some face-to-face meetings occur. And the commercial enterprise in Chicago is pretty important to all of us, and I think they're doing okay and getting better.
Tim Crane, president at Wintrust. Listen, it's good to do business with you, Tim. I appreciate your time today. Let's talk again.
Okay, thank you, John.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's a news flash. People are anxious to travel, and that the vacation travel business is probably going to be pretty good starting in about 30 seconds. Melanie Lieberman is a senior travel editor at The Points Guy, thepointsguy.com. Melanie, you're on WGN Radio. Thanks for saying hi.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I don't think that's breaking news here. Does it continue to be true? Are you seeing more optimistic signs about a return for the travel business this summer?
Definitely. There's a lot of optimism. There's a lot of pent-up demand. We know that about half of Americans are thinking of taking at least one summer vacation, and that just shows how eager people are to hit the road, to see family, to see new places, to get away from family. So there's just a lot of excitement about getting back out there this summer.
Yeah, that's a good point. Do you have any numbers along those lines, things that back that up?
Yeah, I mean, we have a really good sense of the type of people who are traveling. So we do know that people are probably thinking about taking longer, bigger trips than they have in the past. You know, ongoing regulations continue to make travel a little bit more complicated. So people are thinking about staying put a little bit longer when they get there. So people with flexibility are definitely going to be a little bit more eager to travel this summer. But we know that families and millennials make up a big percentage of the people who are getting ready to travel this summer.
The president said that he wants everybody to be ready to roll the 4th of July. He said we'll be able to safely celebrate Independence Day. And I presume he means with some travel and maybe with some more interaction. I don't know if that means masking or not, but we'll be able to mingle more. Is the 4th of July, I guess, a reasonable sort of line in the sand to you, or is it going to take a little bit longer?
I think everyone's going to sort of, you know, dip their toes back into travel at different rates. But we're hearing a lot about just how busy the summer travel season is already looking. So if you are among those people who are thinking about making plans for a 4th of July vacation, reconnecting with friends and family, know that you're not alone. There are just a lot of competition for rental cars, hotel rooms, vacation rentals for these really popular summer travel weekends. So in some ways, it might feel a little bit like normal, just so many people thinking about hitting the road at the same time. But travelers should really brace themselves and be prepared for a lot of demand, a lot of other people getting back out there at the same time.
That's an interesting point. So you think that I'm going to pay what I paid pre-pandemic. And for rental cars, I'm sure you heard more about this than I have. It's insane what people are charging for rental cars.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people probably expected to see just really incredible rates and deals coming out of the pandemic. And that's not to say that those aren't out there, but you have to be flexible to find those deals because a lot of people are planning the same types of trips to the same destination. So road trips are the single most popular type of summer vacation, according to this study. And we know, like you said, the demand for rental cars is really high right now. And that's, you know, an increase in demand at the same time that car rental companies have slashed their fleets during the pandemic. So there's just a lack of supply, a
right.
lot of demand,
yeah.
high prices, and not a lot of cars out there.
Here's I'm reading from a story that you wrote. 49% of travelers would prefer to visit a destination requiring COVID-19 vaccination. So some places might do that, and that's going to capture some business, huh?
Definitely. We're hearing from travelers, for a lot of people, ongoing precautions, prioritizing health and safety from travel providers and destinations, it continues to be really important. So people are looking to travel providers and destinations to enforce mask mandates, to enforce social distancing, to have enhanced cleaning procedures. And one of those things as well is proof of vaccination. So for some people, that is a signal that a travel provider or destination is taking this really seriously. But it can also be what I've been kind of saying is the golden ticket to an easier or more seamless trip. So sometimes requiring proof of vaccination, it just means that's your way out of quarantine or rigorous testing mandates. So for some people, it is a pathway to a more simple vacation experience.
I get that, but that is a trend. That's new, isn't it? Because all along we've been saying, I want proof that you're negative. Just give me a negative test and you can get on the plane or come back into the state. Now they're saying, we're past that point. Now we want you vaccinated, period.
Yeah, for some destinations, for some companies, that will be a requirement. Cruising is one of the examples where that's going to be pretty predominant coming out of the pandemic. A lot of cruise lines have said that their itineraries, at least to start, will have some sort of proof of vaccination requirement for people who can.
Now, remember, it was a cruise ship off the California coast that first introduced us to COVID-19 about 13 months ago, right? I'm trying to remember the name of the boat or the line, but We all remember that cruise ship and the people at first couldn't get off. And then when they did get off, what was their circumstances? So if anybody yep. should be sensitive to that, it would be them.
Right. There are a lot of concerns about people getting stranded on cruise ships. Nobody wants that. So the cruise lines have gone to really great lengths to change their procedures and to make sure not only that they can avoid that kind of situation, but again, that cruisers have peace of mind that they know that every possible precaution is being taken.
Any ideas on the destinations then, say domestically or abroad? What's hot? What should I look for? What should I avoid?
So in terms of what's hot, again, it continues to be a lot of the same things we've seen throughout the pandemic, which I think suggests not only that people are sort of cautiously re-entering travel, but some of these are just classic, awesome summer travel destinations. So national and state parks, beaches. We're seeing a lot of people, again, continuing to take road trips around the country. But of course, that means that you are competing with a lot of other people for those trips. So that's also where things are going to be more expensive, where you might have a harder time finding a rental car if that's something you need. But we know that people are really thinking about visiting national parks this summer. And for people who are comfortable traveling abroad, Mexico and the Caribbean continue to be really popular. I expect there to be a lot of demand there this summer.
I wonder if some of that means that then hotel rates won't be super inflated.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be a real mix. I would encourage travelers to do their research and just know that the more flexible you can be in terms of duration of trip, time of travel, and also where you go, that's where you're going to find those deals. They're really out there, but you have to look carefully.
Read Melanie Lieberman, senior travel editor at The Points Guy, thepointsguy.com. Nice to talk to you, Melanie. We'll visit again. Thanks for your help today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN and more business news now with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago's CineSpace hopes to increase the number of its sound stages by almost 50% by the end of the year. The company recently purchased an empty industrial building at 19th and Rockwell with enough space for 15 to 19 new sound stages by fall. The site could be used for movie or TV production. CineSpace now has 42 sound stages at 2621 West 15th Place and 31st and Kedzie. The owner of CineSpace says business is so hot, he's turning away customers. More than 5,000 employees at the Ford plant in Chicago will be out of work for at least another 3 weeks. The company has extended the shutdown at its assembly plant on the southeast side through May 14th. A worldwide shortage of semiconductors is affecting production in the auto industry. The plant was closed earlier this month because of the shortage. The CEO of Intel says the chip shortage might drag on for another 2 years. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
The Business of Food with Steve Alexander.
Hey, has the cheesecake arrived yet, John?
Oh, no.
National Cherry Cheesecake Day today. You are a major market radio host. I thought somebody would send you some.
Well, I'll guess what? It's 12:45, 12:59. Mm-hmm. I'll get back to you. I'll head for the door and see if there's one waiting.
Thanks. In the wake of Earth Day, let's talk about cow gas. A special kind of seaweed is being used to make the earth better by reducing gas in dairy and beef cattle.
What we've been doing the past couple of years is looking at different feed additives and if they work to reduce methane that forms in the stomach of ruminant animals such as cattle.
That's Brianna Roque, a PhD student in the animal biology department at UC Davis. She and her team discovered that a certain type of red seaweed does for cattle what Beano or Gasex does for humans.
This recent study that was just published, we saw up to an 82% reduction in enteric methane.
And by the way, contrary to the jokesters on social media, cow gas comes out mostly as burps, not from the back end. But cow gas compared to what's coming out of your tailpipe, and by that I mean your vehicle's tailpipe, hardly seems to matter. It is such a small amount, like maybe 5 or 6% of total greenhouse gases.
I do think that every industry needs to do its part, right? And so as an animal biologist, if there's ways that we can reduce the amount of emissions coming from livestock, that you know, it's still worth pursuing these avenues.
One more issue. Does the seaweed in the feed change the taste of the beef? Brianna says over 100 taste testers say no.
And we saw no effect difference on the taste, the tenderness, the overall flavor, which is exciting.
Seaweed, who knew? Much calmer day today at the Chicago Board of Trade. Some after the double-digit gains of the last couple of days. Right now, corn is trading down about a penny and a half. Beans are down 3.5, and wheat is trading off about a half cent. From the farm to your belly, of course, National Cherry Cheesecake Day today. Tomorrow, we celebrate National Pigs in a Blanket Day. Sunday is National Zucchini Bread Day. That's a little early for our area, I think. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
What did you say the percentage was of greenhouse gases caused by cows?
5.5 to 6%.
I thought it was way more than that. Yes. I thought I had heard that they competed with cars.
No, there's a lot of misinformation out there put out by people who don't like animal agriculture.
Yeah, well, I'm happy to hear that. I'm also, I don't care if your share of the pie is 5%, you can make a 4%, then you should try that. But
yeah,
I'm fascinated to hear that number. I had it in my head wrong, Steve.
Yeah, there we go.
12:40, and it's Pigs in a Blanket Day. I just might celebrate. 12:51 on WGN on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Sometimes you can learn a little bit about a company based on the bio of the founders. I'm thinking about John and Dave Blightner. It says, at some point, John and Dave were born. They did other stuff for a while, and then they figured out they were better at making beer than at other stuff, so that's what they do now. Well, I guess that's all we need to know about you, right, Dave?
That's correct. That's what we do.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you. Tell us about the beer that you guys make.
Yeah, so we started back in 2013, and a lot of our ideas were based on, you know, what else is beer about? What can we make that's different than that's out there now? And just everybody's making these IPAs all over the place, the Indian Pale Ales, the real hoppy beers. And that just kind of wasn't our wheelhouse. So we started with a couple, like, different older styles of beer, and eventually we found like a really popular beer in our Apex Predator, which is our farmhouse ale. And I'll tell you, that beer just took off about the first year that we were in production. And then we also did Tooth and Claw, which was a lager beer for the Field Museum. It was like their house beer when they opened up their bistro around that same time, and that really got us going.
How does an upstart beer get a score like that? What a great venue for your product. You'd think that one of the bigger microbrews, if you will, would have already had their foot in that door.
Yeah, it was a funny story. My partner, John, he was really wanted to get bees. He wanted to, like, be an apiarist. So he ended up hanging out with, like, a bunch of apiarists. And then they were doing work at the Field Museum, so he ended up having, you know, beers with some of the events people up there, and we got a meeting with them, and they were like, hey, we really wanted to make a house beer with you guys, and we're like, sounds great.
Yeah, no kidding.
And we got a Sue the T-Rex on the label, and, you know, it's a great beer, great-looking can, and I think people really enjoy that one.
How important is the art or the name of the beer? I mean, you just mentioned that, and I've been looking at your different cans and your labels. They're fun, they're funny, they're unique. But that is a big part of the craft brew business, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you talk about when I wrote this business plan, like 2010, I had to look it up. But there were 1,400 breweries operating, and versus like the end of 2020, there was almost 9,000. So consumers are just like often overwhelmed when they go in like these big chains. And you got to be able to stand out somehow. And I think we've done that kind of with our packaging color. You know, not using color was kind of a crazy idea at the time for an American craft brew, which tends to be overly cartoony or, you know, sometimes a little too over the top.
I agree.
But I think we stand out.
I agree. If you walk down the aisle of Benny's or Jewel, and you'll see the craft brew section, and it looks like you're looking at the funny papers on Sunday, and I'm like, all
exactly.
Right, already. With somebody,
yeah,
and if you're looking for your color combination, sometimes it's very difficult. If you can stand out in that field, you're doing something right.
Yeah, we try to do that. And as far as, like, naming goes, one of the funny things that happened to us in the last year, well, there was a lot of funny things in the last year, but we launched a new beer called Beer for Tacos, which is a margarita-inspired goza. It's like a wheat beer, salt and lime juice. And we were like, haha, that'd be funny. You know, maybe some taco joints will bring it in. And we launched it in February 2020, and it just kind of had this takeoff we haven't seen in a beer before, where, like, within a couple of weeks in, it was already our number 2 bestseller. And we're like, okay, I wonder what's happening with this. And then we just kind of went with it because we're like, you know, sales are down because COVID's took away all our draft customers. And, you know, it really gave us a chance to try to do something a little more innovative than the day-to-day stuff. So we launched last year, we launched beer for golf, beer for burgers, beer for pizza, beer for brunch, beer for cafes, beer for beaches, beer for derbies, like the Kentucky Derby, cherry beer for pizza. And this whole brand line has been really well received. Won the Tribune poll recently for Chicago beer that pulled you through, which was kind of cool for us because we were like, oh, like this is important beyond just some silly thing that we do.
Well, it's also just kind of brilliant, even if there weren't a pandemic. Hey, I'm going to get some pizza. What's a good beer? Oh, it says right here on the can, beer for pizza. Dummy.
So exactly.
But I suppose the taste is what matters, too. And clearly, having bought it, people continue to buy off-color brewing beers. You'll find it in stores throughout Chicagoland. Dave Blightner, the co-founder, offcolorbrewing.com. Okay, good on you, Dave. Thanks for visiting with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Continued success.